You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello, welcome to this week's special episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks again for joining me this week. We're going to do something a little different this week. We're going to, first of all, dedicate this particular episode to the injured and disabled law enforcement officers of this nation. And as a result of that, we are going to announce the formation and the launch of the Wounded Blue, the national assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is a brand new organization. The official launch is going to be during Police Week, but we are about to commence our fundraising efforts. So I'm going to tell you all about this organization and the special people who are involved with it. But before we do that, we're going to go into the briefing room, and I'm going to give you my view from the blue, but in a little different methodology, if you will. I'm going to give you three monologues from my new television show, True Blue, the voice of American law enforcement. I think you'll enjoy them. The first opinion piece is this. The American law enforcement officer is facing an avalanche of death and violence. As disturbing as the upward trend of murder and assaults against officers is, perhaps even more insidious is the silent killer within. I'm talking about police suicide. It's a topic the law enforcement community has hidden away far too long. But with the revelation that more law enforcement officers took their own lives than all line of duty deaths combined, it's time to confront this tragedy and recognize it for what it is, a deadly threat. A deadly threat to be dealt with head on through training, exposure, and compassionate ethical leadership. This is not really a new phenomenon. In my 34-year police career, 15 of which I served on the department's honor guard, I buried more friends and comrades than I wish to recall. Perhaps that is one of the issues that haunts us as officers. It's easier to push these memories aside than confront our own feelings. Feelings of guilt for perhaps not recognizing the signs or pushing them aside in purposeful disbelief. Feelings of helplessness and not knowing how to approach a friend or coworker we do recognize as struggling. And perhaps the more frightening feeling of all, understanding that darkness lives within us all, and there before the grace of God go I. I know this all too well. There are certain memories that burn within us forever. One of mine is a cold winter night, as I sat in my kitchen, gazing out of the frozen panes of glass into the swirling patterns of wind-battered snowfall. I was alone, except for a half-empty bottle of Johnny Walker and my .45, both on the table before me. The isolation and loneliness I felt crushed me with their embrace as I took another pull from the bottle and then wrapped my hand around the grip of my pistol. I was one of the lucky ones. The darkness lifted, and I found a pathway forward, but I still shudder when I remember that night. The question, of course, is why? Why do law enforcement officers often feel so isolated and alone, even when they might have a loving family that surrounds them? Why do feelings of helplessness often invade their souls? Why do they fail to reach out for help when the darkness engulfs them? What are the causes that lead to police depression? There are so many factors that come into play, both internal and external. The first factor is the job itself. Police academies and college courses simply cannot prepare someone for what the average law enforcement officer will encounter over a period of years or decades. Bearing witness to all manners of violent death takes an enormous spiritual toll, as does the constant diet of cruelty, greed, selfishness, and violence that becomes the norm. You see, when the abnormal becomes the norm, the human psyche becomes scarred and damaged. Imagine, if you will, a tall glass. That glass is empty at the beginning of a police career. The first horrific car crash, with broken bodies strewn around the scene, is the first drop of liquid pain. There will be many, many more. The suicides, the murders, the stabbings, the grieving families, the palpable pain of others cannot help but to fill that glass, and at some point when the glass becomes full, the next drop will cause the inevitable overflow. And like a falling teardrop sliding down that glass, if something is not done to empty it, or more practically, pour some of that pain out, the officer may drown in the overflow. Post-traumatic stress injury is as real as a bullet. Like any injury, it can be treated and healed, but it cannot be ignored. For like any other injury, if left untreated, it can turn deadly. I'll never forget the words of a police officer's wife, who, her husband suffering terribly in the aftermath of a shooting and killing a suspect, reached out for help from his department and was denied by his chief. She looked at me with the memory still burning and tears running down her cheeks and said, "No one should die from PTSD. No one should die from post-traumatic stress injury. But they inevitably will. Why? Because incredibly, there are many states, cities, and law enforcement agencies that do not even recognize post-traumatic stress injury as a legitimate injury. And as difficult as that is to believe, there are thousands of police agencies in this country that, should an officer even ask for help, will instead choose to discipline them. And that includes firing them or accusing them of being mentally ill, take away their weapons, and assign them to other duties. It's time for the law enforcement community and the American people who care about their cops to demand change. Demand that lawmakers do their jobs and enact laws to safeguard the lives of our officers, and demand that law enforcement leaders create policies that include compassion, empathy, and healing for those who have sacrificed so much for their communities. We owe them that, and so much more. If you're a law enforcement officer, you know that wearing body armor, besides being uncomfortable, sometimes can get a little odoriferous, if you will. Wearing that gets sweaty, gets hot. It's difficult sometimes to find the right deodorizer that works, that is natural, that will take care of business. And there's a great product on the market, and it's a Rest My Vest spray, and it's military police grade odor eliminating spray. Now, you don't have to just use it on vest. It's good for all kinds of clothing items. A Rest My Vest spray. Now, where do you get it? StinkyVest.com. Of course, StinkyVest.com. And they've got this great product. I highly suggest it. It's not expensive. It works really well. And what it does is it eliminates odors through absorbing molecules, odor-absorbing molecules. Doesn't use harmful chemicals, and it's great for pets. It's great for all your clothing items. So check it out. StinkyVest.com. Arrest My Vest Spray. Check it out, stinkyvest.com. This is the second opinion piece from the new television show True Blue, the voice of American law enforcement. Two entirely different law enforcement incidents involving officers from two different departments in different states, but they both illustrate the state of policing in America. The first arises out of an incident in San Antonio, Texas. Police were dispatched to a residence because of a disturbance call. When they arrived, they learned that the parents of a 27-year-old man had called them because their son was, quote, throwing things around the house causing a disturbance, unquote. The unit that responded to this incident was a training unit. There was a sergeant and two probationary officers. Now, let me explain what that means. The two probationary officers were recently out of the academy, and before they were allowed to go on patrol on their own, they had to be properly trained and evaluated to make sure that they were prepared. What happened next would answer that question. The sergeant and two officers went to the subject's room to deal with the situation, and that's when all hell broke loose. The son was armed with a shotgun and opened fire on the officers. The sergeant returned fire and was involved in a gun battle, but when the shooting started, the two probationary officers ran away, leaving the sergeant alone to deal with the firefight. You heard me right. They ran away. When I read the report of this, my jaw dropped. How is it possible that not one, but two officers would turn tail and run? Luckily, the sergeant, a 26-year police veteran, clearly was a warrior, and he effectively returned fire and killed the attacker. But it could have turned out very differently. In the aftermath, the chief of San Antonio, William McManus, did exactly what he should have done. He fired the two probationary officers immediately, and in what I can only say was a masterful understatement, he said, quote, "I felt it best that these two officers need to look for another profession," unquote. Yeah, I would have to agree. But now, here is the question that looks deeper into this incident. How is it that these two cowards were not weeded out before this shooting took place? How did they get through the hiring process? How did they make it out of the academy? Now, had one of these officers revealed themselves to not have what it takes at a critical incident, well, that would not be all that unusual. But two, I believe that this incident may just be another symptom of what is happening across America, a shrinking pool of qualified people applying for law enforcement jobs, recruiting efforts that focus on guardianship personalities instead of warriors. Basic police training that has been tainted by politically correct curriculum instead of officer survival tactics designed to save officers' lives. And the second, third, and fourth chances when new officers demonstrate early on that they do not have what it takes to be an effective law enforcement officer. Why? Because law enforcement agencies are not only cost-conscious, but afraid of legal backlash when they hold incompetent or unsafe officers accountable during their training and dismiss them. The reality is this is not really something new. Law enforcement history is peppered with tragic and embarrassing scandals resulting directly from hiring substandard people because of political considerations or cronyism. Now, let's move a couple of states over to the second incident. Pittsburgh, California police responded to a call in which a man had called them to report that his son, a 33-year-old man, had tried to stab him through a closed screen door. Officers responded, found the suspect about three blocks away. Knowing he was armed, the officers surrounded him and attempted to negotiate with him. Now, this situation was recorded, and if you look it up, you'll be able to see the video itself. The Pittsburgh officers were clearly highly trained. They had good coverage in terms of numbers of officers, and they had what appeared to be a strategy and a plan using low lethality tools such as beanbag rounds, a taser, and a canine. And yet the suspect managed to stab an officer. Why? Because these officers chose to go hands-on with a suspect armed with a deadly weapon. This particular arrest had a somewhat happy ending. No critical injuries or death. But in reality, this was only an accident. The officer who was stabbed by the knife in the neck could easily have been catastrophically injured or killed. The chief of police, Brian Addington, commended all the officers for their, quote, extreme constraint, unquote, throughout the encounter with the suspect and said that their actions were heroic. In essence, what we saw was diametrically opposed to the San Antonio incident. In Pittsburgh, we saw officers charge into the danger zone. But here's my question and my concern. Why? Why did these officers make a conscious choice to place themselves in danger of being stabbed when they could have legally used deadly force? Could it be that they were more concerned with the legal and political environment that is now pervading California and other states that are embracing the concepts of purposeful persecution by prosecution of law enforcement officers involved in deadly force incidents? Could the fact that the highly publicized shooting of Stephen Clark in Sacramento, which found that the officers acted properly, but still incited political leaders, I use that term loosely, like the mayor of Sacramento, to call for change in laws to allow police to be charged criminally even though the shooting may have been justified? Could that have played a conscious or subconscious role in the Pittsburgh officers' decisions? There is absolutely no doubt that law enforcement officers are facing ever-increasing scrutiny for deadly force incidents, sometimes having to withstand investigations by multiple bodies of government that take months or even years to complete. Knowing that their decisions that they are forced to make in just seconds will have lifelong consequences is just one more factor in the unfolding crisis of recruitment and retention of law enforcement in America. And this, ladies and gentlemen, these are my view from the blue. I want to tell you about a really interesting company that has a nationwide security presence. It's called offdutypoliceofficers.com. It's actually law enforcement specialists, but you can check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. They have a very unique approach to providing security to commercial establishments, residential, any security need that you might have, because they use actual sworn officers. So if you are a police officer or deputy in this country and you want to work extra jobs, as most do, usually you go through your department. This company, offdutypoliceofficers.com, is their website, law enforcement specialists, actually makes arrangements so that you can work those off-duty jobs, and they work in concert with your agency. It's a great opportunity, and also they are they have a great presence in almost every state in the union. So, law enforcement specialists, if you are a law enforcement officer and you want to work extra jobs, contact them, offdutypoliceofficers.com. If you have a security need, if you are a commercial establishment, if you are a construction company and you need traffic jobs, contact them. They have the personnel. They are trained. They are law enforcement officers, and they have all the abilities to provide all of your security needs. And they are a great company. They're based out of Arizona, but they're all over the country. Offdutypoliceofficers.com, and it's law enforcement specialists. You can also contact them by phone, 888-572-2442. It's 888-572-2442.
The silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Tell you now about something I have been working on for the last two or so years, and we are finally about to give birth to this organization. It's called the Wounded Blue. Now, what is the Wounded Blue? We are the national assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. What does that mean? Well, in reality, there is a tragedy taking place across America. And I can tell you quite honestly that this is not something that I had ever planned on creating. But in my role as a law enforcement commentator, as an individual who is an advocate for law enforcement officers, over the last 5 or 6 years, maybe even more, I've literally been inundated by incredibly tragic stories of officers who have been injured or disabled in the line of duty, and then being tossed away by their departments and even by their friends. What you're about to hear is the audio from the trailer of the new film, The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed.
It's a weekly, daily, and monthly challenge of what we're going to juggle, how to get the bills paid, how to even put food on the table. We have three boys.
Craig was injured in a shooting. He didn't die that day, and you couldn't see his injuries, but he died from those injuries. So my motto since the beginning is not one more, but no one should die from PTSD.
What good is it to teach us how to survive on these streets until we get home and everything falls to crap and we don't know what's happening to us and we don't know what to do about it? Our families are falling, our families are struggling, my kids are crying, because nobody told me that I'm supposed to be still fighting here.
There are times when, for no reason, I'll just start crying. Or I'll get into a rage. No reason. There are times when I wake up at night screaming and I can smell gunpowder, I can smell blood.
I felt like as long as I could come back to work, I was useful to the department. They could use me. The minute I couldn't, even though it was work-related, throw them away.
They've given everything they can up to the edge of their life. And what they do have left of a life is compromised because of what they've given.
This is taking place all over America. This is a national tragedy. This is something that is not known within the American public. It is not even known oftentimes within law enforcement circles itself.
Well, guess what? I am you. And I have post-traumatic stress disorder.
What you just heard was the audio portion of the trailer of our film, The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. You know, when a police officer gets injured or disabled, it's not only a physical pain, but it's an emotional pain as well. Now, there's probably something that you, my listeners, don't know about my police career and why I left policing. I did retire. I did 34 years, and that's a pretty damn good run, I gotta say. But the reason that I left was because I had a stroke in my police car. It was quite literally the most frightening thing that ever occurred in my career. Well, actually, maybe in my life. I was on patrol, and I worked as a lieutenant. That was for the last 7 years of my career. I was a lieutenant with Las Vegas Metro PD. And I worked steady graveyard shift. I did that because that was in Vegas. That's the action shift. That's where everything is happening. Well, whenever I was watch commander, which meant that we were, as a watch commander, you're the highest ranking officer on duty that particular shift. And so it's your responsibility to go to all the hot calls, anything involving hostage incidents, anything that requires a higher ranking officer. So this particular night I was watch commander. And when I was watch commander, I would always take a patrol officer with me. This way I got to, A, show my younger cops that their lieutenant actually could do some police work now and then, but also to get to know my people, because there's nothing like spending 10 hours in a patrol car with somebody to get to know about them. And so I had this young patrol officer with me, and we were coming from a death call, and we were literally on the Las Vegas Strip, the famed Las Vegas Strip, and I felt my brain slowing down, and I knew what was happening. I knew that I was suffering a stroke. I stopped the police car right in the middle of the strip, and I said to this poor young kid, first night he ever rode with me, and said, you got to get me medical. I'm having a stroke. And at first he looked at me like, is the lieutenant screwing with me? And then he realized, no, he's probably not screwing with me. And I got out of the car to go to the passenger side in case he needed to get me to the hospital. And by the time I got to the other side of the car, I was unable to speak anything other than gibberish. And that's, I got to tell you, that's one of the scariest things that ever happened to me. Was I knew what I was trying to say, but I couldn't control what was coming out of my mouth, and I knew it. And then I lost the ability to speak entirely, and I crumpled to the pavement. And that's where I stayed until the ambulance came to take me away. Now, I was very fortunate. That angel that's been sitting on my shoulder my entire career was with me that night as well. And so the clot that went through my brain, which could have done really serious damage or killed me, got me for some memory loss issues and some speech issues, but didn't really cripple me or you know, have a really devastating effect on my body. But it did end my police career. And in Nevada, state of Nevada, there's a state law called the Heart-Lung Bill. And what that law says is very clear. Any disease of the heart or lung, this is for police and fire, is automatically considered a workers' compensation injury. Well, when they did the tests and they realized that I had a heart problem I didn't even know, a very serious one. And the department didn't pay my medical bills. They denied it. They just arbitrarily said, no, we're not paying. And this is, like I said, a state law that says this is a workers' compensation injury. They forced me to go to court. They forced me to spend almost a year fighting them. And what's really devastating about that is that I saw that as a almost a treasonous thing to happen to a policeman. You know, your own department, your own agency, doesn't fulfill its responsibilities to take care of you. And I actually went to the sheriff, a guy who I'd served with for years, decades. And I asked him, I said, Sheriff, how can you do this to me? I gave you 24 years of my life. I almost gave my life in the line of duty several times. And he looked at me matter-of-factly, he said, Randy, this isn't personal. It's just business. Just business. Didn't feel that way to me. I persevered, and I won. They knew they were going to have to pay my medical bills, but in essence, they were hoping that either A, I was going to give up, or B, I was going to die. And that was my first understanding, if you will, of a system that is designed against the American law enforcement officer. Now, I was okay. Financially, I had enough years on to retire. If I had less than 10 years on, and I did not have a vested pension, well, I would have been out of luck. Now, who's more likely to become injured and disabled in the line of duty? A guy with 24 years on or a young, hard-charging patrol officer with 3 or 4 or 6 years? That was my first understanding, if you will, of this system. So then I retired, and I continued to do what I love to do, and that is advocate on a part of law enforcement to write about law enforcement through articles and then, of course, my radio show and now my television show. Well, because of the social media aspect and now you can, it's so easy to connect with other people. I kept on getting these heart-wrenching messages from police officers and deputies all over the country who reached out to me, not because I could do anything, but simply out of desperation. They didn't know who else to turn to. And so they wrote to me and they said, Randy, I was shot, or I was stabbed, or I was run over by a car, or I fell while I was doing a pursuit, and I crippled myself, and my department isn't paying my medical bills. They've turned their back on me. It wasn't just one or two. I mean, we're talking hundreds over the years. And I kept on thinking, well, wait a minute. There's got to be an organization, some group that helps these officers. The Peer Advocate Support Team of the Wounded Blue is made up of men and women, all who have experienced the pain and trauma of being injured or disabled in the line of duty. And not only physical injuries. You know, we understand how debilitating post-traumatic stress injury can be. Now, notice that I refer to it as post-traumatic stress injury, because post-traumatic stress doesn't need to become a disorder. It can become a disorder if left untreated, if ignored, if not taken seriously, but it doesn't have to be. Post-traumatic stress can be dealt with, can be treated. And the reality is that it is as real as a bullet. If left untreated, if left alone and ignored, it can become a killer. Now, we know that for a fact because in 2018, it was revealed that more police officers took their lives than gave their lives in the line of duty. This, my friends, is unacceptable. This is something that we cannot turn our backs on. And while there are many other factors involved, post-traumatic stress is clearly the major one. We have to do a better job. We have to do a better job of understanding, experiencing, and then dealing with each other, and our departments must take a leadership role in making treatment of not only available, but advocate for treatment and to take an ethical leadership approach, one of compassion and empathy. You know, one of the things that I found that was shocking to me, I shake my head. And those of you that are in law enforcement or are very familiar because of your family members may have experienced this. There are many, many police organizations, law enforcement organizations in this country that A, don't recognize post-traumatic stress as even an injury. There are agencies and states who not only do not recognize it as an injury, but will not accept it as being something that is treatable. And not only that, but there are departments that even if you go and ask for help, they will discipline up to and including termination just for asking for help. It's shocking that in this day and age, this is taking place in America. It is one of the greatest tragedies facing law enforcement. It is one of the most incredible injustices. And the Wounded Blue will combat that. The Wounded Blue will be the voice of the voiceless. Now, I'm going to tell you a couple more things about what the Wounded Blue is and what we have planned. First of all, I have a national support team. They're called Peer Advocate Support Team Members. All of them are trained. All of them have been there. They all understand. They speak the language. Because, you know, you don't need to even be suffering from post-traumatic stress injury to need to have to talk to somebody that's been there. And that's why these men and women have all volunteered. They're from all over the country. And they are opening themselves up to talk to their brothers and sisters who are hurting. Doesn't cost a dime. They are not only, you know, there to lend an ear, but to also to work, if needed, to help our officers get into treatment for post-traumatic stress, to get into treatment for addiction, to get into connections with other supporting organizations that might help. And let me tell you, these men and women are my heroes. They're putting themselves out there because, you know, absorbing the pain of others, which is what cops do normally, it can be really challenging. And these men and women care so much about the men and women who are still serving that they have volunteered themselves. Now, this is an organization that is growing. We have, at this point, just offered peer support because we are officially launching during Police Week. So we have to have the resources available to put programs into place, including our suicide prevention program, which I'll tell you about pretty soon. And other programs. So here's our approach. I call it our SEAL team approach. SEAL being support, education, assistance, and legislation. We're going after all of these four components because together we can impact this problem. Legislation will be vitally important. One of the people on my team, who's on my board of directors, is the wife of a wounded officer who has worked tirelessly to assist police around the country with new laws and protections. She has created some really great relationships. We're going to be on Capitol Hill a lot trying to get senators and congressmen on our side that understand the plight of injured and disabled law enforcement. We have a documentary film that is actually going to be released in just about a week. You'll be able to rent it or purchase it on Amazon.com. It's a feature film called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. So Bob Bemis and I will be available for a four-hour training course to be given to law enforcement leadership and organizations such as the FOP, PBA, police unions, police organizations. If you are interested in booking us to come over and give this presentation, you can contact me at randy@thewoundedblue.org. That's randy@thewoundedblue.org. And we can, I'll fill you in on just how easy it is to get us to come on over. So support, education, assistance, and legislation. One of the most important aspects of this organization is peer support. Assisting officers to know that they are not alone, to know that they are not forgotten. When you see the film, You better bring your tissues, because it's tough to watch and see. But it demonstrates unequivocally how so many officers are being treated so disrespectfully and inhumanely by their own agencies. This filmmaker who created this is a retired police sergeant from Las Vegas Metropolitan Police. His name is Jason Harney. And Jason and I worked together for many years. And he was making films even as a police officer. But when he retired, he began to do this full time. He's got a feature coming out very, very soon that's not only The Wounded Blue, but he's working on other films as well. And he didn't understand originally. When I went to him and I told him about this idea, he said, you know, let's do a film. I'm agreeable to do that. But it only took his first interview with one of our injured police officers who's featured in this film for him to, he looked at me, he came to me and he said, Randy, I know you told me that this was happening, but we have to do something. And I said, yeah, you're right. Let's make this film. And you're going to be really impressed with the quality of this film and the men and women who are being featured in it. Many of these people are peer support team members. Others are officers who have faced these terrible odds, become catastrophically injured, and face the uphill battle of trying to normalize their lives. And when I say uphill battle, I mean they're battling their own departments, they're battling the cities that they worked for. They're battling themselves because of the difficulties in dealing emotionally with the physical injuries. So, The Wounded Blue, what I would love for you to do is this. I would love for you to go to our website. It is thewoundedblue.org. Thewoundedblue.org. And read about what we are. We need your help. We need your help to improve the lives of these men and women. How? Well, you can either volunteer to help us. You can support us financially. You can do that by either donating on the page itself. You can go to the GoFundMe campaign, which is going to begin March 15th. March 15th, we want everybody that wants to give 5, 10, 15 bucks, whatever you can do, to go to the GoFundMe during this campaign and give what you can. Help us bring this to the attention of the American people. You see, American people don't know that this issue even exists. When I tell people what this organization is, they look at me and they go, wait a minute. You mean to tell me that if a police officer gets shot, that they're not going to be taken care of? And I have to tell them the truth. I said, it depends on where you are. If you are in certain geographical areas with a strong union and strong laws, then the chances are you're going to be okay financially, not necessarily being supported emotionally and mentally and psychologically, but at least physically you may be taken care of okay. But in other areas, you simply won't. Let me give you an example. And this is featured in our film. But even I, to this day, shake my head and I can't believe it. There's a police lieutenant in Oklahoma. A wife, three beautiful children. He gets involved in a pursuit. doesn't know that the people that he is pursuing, it's two units, are in a pursuit. He's a secondary. They had made a car stop, and then this SUV took off. It had three occupants. What he doesn't know is that there are three hired killers in this car. And during the pursuit, they open fire with a rifle, and they strike this lieutenant in the head. He goes unconscious. He loses control. And this is all on video. His car rolls over numerous times. He suffers a traumatic brain injury. He's severely injured. They don't pay his medical bills for a year and a half. A year and a half, they don't pay his medical bills. This is a hero cop who was shot in the head until a court ordered them. The court ordered the city to pay his damn medical bills. But look what it did to him financially. It ruined him. And now, today, this is only a couple years later, they're giving him $375 a week on which to live, and they're trying to take that away from him. This is injustice. This is unconscionable. And this is taking place all over America. We cannot stand by and let this happen to our men and women. And that, my friends, is why the Wounded Blue is so important. You can tell I'm a little passionate about this. Because I believe that in my 34-year police career, which I am very proud of, there is nothing better that I can do for the men and women of this profession than guide the Wounded Blue along to be what it should be. And that is the voice for the voiceless. An organization that can touch the lives of thousands of law enforcement officers and their families. Because let's face it, it isn't just the officers themselves who are suffering. It's their wives, it's their husbands, it's their children, it's their parents. And nothing exists to help them, but it sure as hell will, because the Wounded Blue is going to be that organization. You know, I have nothing but deep, abiding respect for the organization COPS, Concerns of Police Survivors. These folks do it right. They are there for police families when an officer falls. And I have worked with them. I know of their dedication. And I love their model, the way that they provide support for their families and of those left behind. And that is exactly what the Wounded Blue is going to do for the families of the injured and disabled law enforcement officers, to be there for them, to provide retreats. We are looking at building Camp Blue. Camp Blue will be an area of beauty where injured and disabled law enforcement officers can get away to work with one another to help heal, and also to provide a getaway for the families, and create peer teams for them. We have a lot to offer, and we have a lot on the table here, but we can't do it alone. I need your help. We need your help. So go to thewoundedblue.org. Contact me if you want to help. I'm really easy to find. Randy@thewoundedblue.org. Go to my Facebook page. Go to our Facebook page, The Wounded Blue. Like it. Follow it. You'll be able to tell when we're doing fundraisers. You can tell when we're going to be doing campaigns and events. Support us, not just by cash donations, but support us through your input. If you are an injured or disabled officer, you're suffering from post-traumatic stress injury, and you need somebody to talk to, go to the website. Send me a message. One of my peer team advocates will contact you. And it's confidential. You know, one of the coolest things we're doing is we're creating a membership-based organization. Over the years, not only, you know, have I had a lot of interaction with law enforcement officers, but also with just John Q. Citizen, who's, I mean, thousands of messages that I've gotten saying, Randy, I support law enforcement. I don't know how to show it. And I never really had a way to say, hey, you know, this is what you should do, what I do now. The Wounded Blue, one of our desires is to bring the community and the police closer together through the sharing of the commonality of empathy and compassion for these men and women. So in order to do that, we've created the Wounded Blue membership. For law enforcement, there are some really, really cool things here. There's 24-hour telemedicine where you can actually talk to an MD 24/7. There is discounts to medical imaging. There's discounts to dental plans. But the most important, and this is groundbreaking, is that you will, by being an active duty or retired former law enforcement officer, by being a member of the Wounded Blue, you can access mental health professionals from the privacy of your own home via video conferencing. These are licensed psychologists who specializes in post-traumatic stress. And you do so through the privacy of your own home. Your insurance company will never know about it. Your department will never know about it. And it's completely private. It's the Confidential Assistance Program for Emergency Responders, CAPER. This is going to be available very, very soon at our launch. So we're taking a tremendous approach here. If you're a citizen and you want to show that you care, when you join the Wounded Blue as an associate member, you're going to get discounts. You're going to love this. To 300,000 different businesses across the United States. You get 300 discounts to 300,000. Papa John's Pizza, Disneyland, a whole bunch of others. And you'll also get some pretty cool stuff like a driver's license holder. You'll get decals for your cars. You get to show that you're a supporter. And you'll be able to adopt a cop. You'll be able to help a law enforcement officer get a membership. Because one thing that we will make sure of, and that is that no officer will be left behind. The Wounded Blue. It's going to change the way law enforcement officers are treated when they are suffering from physical or emotional injury. I need your help. I ask for your support. Go to thewoundedblue.org. Message me at randy@thewoundedblue.org. If you want to help, either financially, perhaps you might want to do a fundraiser for us, work with us in some way. If you're an officer who wants to become a peer team member, we're going to be expanding our teams. It's limitless. It's time for a change. It's time for us to care about our cops. I have a feeling if you listen to this show, you do. TheWoundedBlue.org.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This week I have two names to read. The first is Police Officer Nathan Hayden Heidelberg of the Midland Police Department in Texas. Police Officer Nathan Heidelberg was shot and killed while responding to a burglary alarm at a residence at 3306 Eagle Cove in Midland. Officer Heidelberg, a probationary officer, he was training, and two other officers had responded to the alarm call at 2:30 a.m. They were at the open front door making loud announcements identifying themselves when the homeowner opened fire towards the flashlight Officer Heidelberg was holding. Officer Heidelberg was struck by a round above his vest. He was transported to a local hospital where he succumbed to his wounds at 8:30 a.m. The homeowner who shot him was arrested and charged with manslaughter. Officer Heidelberg had served with the Midland Police Department for 5 years. Police Officer Nathan Hayden Heidelberg, Midland Police Department, Texas. End of watch, Tuesday, March 5th, 2019. The second officer is Deputy Sheriff Jacob Howard Keltner of the McHenry County Sheriff's Office in Illinois. Deputy Sheriff Jacob Keltner was shot and killed as he and other members of the Great Lakes Fugitive Task Force attempted to serve an arrest warrant in Rockford, Illinois. The task force located the subject at a hotel, 747 North Bell School Road. They were attempting to arrest the man at 9:15 a.m. when he opened fire with a rifle, striking a woman who was staying with him. The man then exited the room and opened fire on officers who were outside, striking Officer Keltner. The man then fled from the hotel, led officers on a pursuit that lasted over 150 miles. The vehicle became disabled on I-55 near Lincoln, and the subject was taken into custody after barricading himself inside of it for several hours. Deputy Keltner was transported to a local hospital, where he succumbed to his wounds approximately 6 hours after being shot. Deputy Keltner served with the McHenry County Sheriff's Office for 13 years. He is survived by his wife, two young children, his wife and brother, who both work in DuPage County law enforcement. Deputy Sheriff Jacob Howard Keltner, McHenry County Sheriff's Office, Illinois. End of watch, Thursday, March 7th, 2019. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for taking the time to join me on the Voice of American Law Enforcement, Blue Lives Radio. If you would, I would really love for you to visit thewoundedblue.org. That's thewoundedblue.org, because this is one of the most important organizations that I've ever been involved with, and it is going to touch the lives of hundreds of thousands of law enforcement families in this country. Also, check out my books, Amazon.com. You'll see them all. Thanks again for joining me on Blue Lives Radio, the Voice of American Law Enforcement. We'll see you next week.